I'm an intellectual. I'm an intellectual. I'm an intellectual. Yo, 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 what's going on? It's your boy, Kem. Are you interested in becoming a sponsor for the Fly Young Intellectual podcast? Would you like us to advertise your business on this platform? If interested, email us at info@flyyoungintellectual.com. That's info@flyyoungintellectual.com. We're waiting to hear from you. Peace. What's going on, people? It's your boy, Kem, and welcome back to another episode of the Fly Young Intellectual podcast. And on today's episode, we have a very, very, very special guest. I have been conversing with him over the course of the past month or so, getting to know him more, and we are going to introduce him to the FYI world. Joe Rivera is his name. He's a life coach, motivational speaker. He's a mindset coach, productivity coach. He's a keynote speaker as well, and he's utilizing his story. He has an amazing story about triumph, about loss, about grief, about successes, and how to navigate it all, and making sure that we're utilizing our mindset and maximizing it so that we can get through life as optimal as we can. So I want to make sure that we welcome Joe Rivera to the FYI podcast. What's going on, Joe? How are you, bro?
Hey, Cam, man. What's going on? Thanks for having me, man.
No, how's thanks for being going? Here, man. Everything's going well, man. Everything's going well. Pushing through, trying to make sure that we continue to get great interviews on the podcast. And this one is not going to be any different. Just hearing about your story, talking to you previously, reading up for myself. You have an amazing story that kind of involves everything from mindset to self-help to making sure that we can know when we need help, which is a super important part as well. So, you know, welcome to the podcast, bro. Very, very happy to leverage the platform for you. And I'm looking forward to the conversation that we're about to have.
I'm looking forward to it also, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem, man. Let's kind of go chronologically. Let's talk about your upbringing, where you're from, kind of introduce the people to who Joe Rivera is.
All right, so I was born and raised in New York. I was born into a, I guess you could say, middle class family. I was raised by my mother and my grandmother, my aunts. I did not have a father. My father left when I was 2 years old. I did have a father figure. I mean, I call him my father now because the only steps in the stairs. All the stairs, you know what I mean? It takes a man to make a to raise a baby, not just to make one. And yeah, that's what my father has done in my life. So, you know, I had a good childhood, didn't need for anything. I mean, I wanted for more, right? That's normal. Yeah. But yeah. I had a good childhood, man. I don't have complaints about my childhood. My mother was the jack of all trades. You know, she put the mother hat on, the father hat on, the best friend hat on, so everything.
Yeah, so you had that community, even though you didn't have a lot of those integral parts, people stepped up in a role that you felt like you had that complete support growing up, so to speak.
Yeah, I definitely had the support growing up. That support group is kind of what's kept me going throughout life. You know, without family, man, family is one of my number one core value, you know. It's just, it's very important to me, always has been, always will be.
Yeah, and yeah, a lot of times, I guess, the family structure, we kind of, especially in this day and age, it seems like it's not as important just in the grand scheme of when we check off those boxes of things that we need. But I think if you definitely, you know, put a microscope on it, family will and always will be, has been and will always be super important to the growth of children and getting that support system.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So then you left, so New York, how long did you stay in New York? I know you made it, you worked your way into the finance realm. So talk about like kind of why finance at first, like what sparked your interest there and how you even got to like the Wall Street side of things.
Awesome. So I'm still in New York. I haven't left, not yet. But so I got to the financial industry is it's kind of so I was going to college. I went to college for a couple of semesters before I dropped out. And the college I was going to was a called Briarcliff College in Bethpage, New York. And when you got into the parking lot of Briarcliff, inside the parking lot, when I got there, there was a bunch of fancy cars. I mean, all high-end cars. And I said, wow, what's going on here, man? These college kids can't be affording these kind of cars. Either they're selling drugs or their parents gave them to them. But I want to find out what's going on. So I went upstairs to the third floor. And I the elevator opens, and I see a bunch of guys running around with fancy suits, $5,000 watches, beautiful women sitting at the at each corner of the office. And I said, "Wow, what's going on here, man? I want to get involved." So I stopped one of the guys on the floor, and I said, "What goes on up here? What is this?" And he said, "This is a brokerage firm." And I said, all right, so how do I get involved? Do I have to finish college? He said, no. I said, sign me up. And I ended up going for my Series 7. And that's kind of, you know, where it all started at.
Wow. So literally it kind of, you got motivated by something that you saw, the representation of what you thought that your next level looked like. And you wanted to see what was directly connected to it. And it happened to be literally brokerage.
The financial industry, it was hook, line, and sinker, man. With all the action, the money that was involved, it didn't take much to sell me on taking the opportunity.
How long did it take you to kind of work your way through that? And how were you good at it at first? Obviously, when you're in that industry, it takes a certain level of shark, right? There's no guy out there within that industry that's really kind of passive or that kind of thing. It seems like it's like all the time, 100%, got to give that, got to be a tiger, you got to be a lion. So how soon did you know it really was for you?
Like I said, I mean, it was literally like love at first sight. You know, I fell in love with the industry. I grew up always wanting to be an actor and kind of that didn't happen, obviously. And once I got into this, I was like, wow, this was one of my purposes. This was what I was meant to do. And, you know, I failed the Series 7 the first two times. After that, I passed it on the third. If I would have failed the third time, I would have had to wait a year. I don't know if I would have waited that year. So I think divine intervention kicked in and God was just like, this is where you're supposed to be. And I ended up jumping into the business after passing it on my third time. And look, repetition is the mother of skill, you know. So the more you practice something, the better you're going to get at it. And eventually I worked my way up towards being a top producer.
Sick. Sick. And so you worked your way to being a top producer. Obviously, you had all the success. You had you made your way to the top of that mountain. And then there was a tipping point, so to speak, when did that tipping point kind of hit? Because obviously you started kind of dabbling with things, and that was kind of like at your demise to a certain extent.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I was in high school, I was dabbling already with drugs and alcohol. And, you know, I started off with weed, smoked my first joint at like 13 years old. And by the time I was in high school, my senior year, I was already doing cocaine. And I thought I had it by the horns. I didn't know it had me by the horns. You know, I thought I controlled it. It wasn't controlling me. And little did I know when I got into the brokerage industry, little did I know that Wall Street was also drug street if you allowed it to be. And I definitely allowed it to be. You know, I was a top producer. I thought I was on top of the world. In my 20s, 25 years old, making seven figures a year. You know, I said, who's going to tell me I have to stop? I control this. It doesn't control me. And it just continued to run rampant. My addiction got stronger and stronger and stronger. I was just using and abusing every single day. And then one day someone approached me and said to me, you think you're a top producer now? Try this little round pill and you're going to produce even more. And that's when I got hooked onto opiates and really took me to my knees.
Wow. Wow, it's crazy because we all have that, I guess, that youthful ignorance where you feel like you're a Superman, right? There's no, you know, there's nothing that can defeat me. You know, obviously I'm doing my thing at a high level. So we kind of, you know, we all have, I think we all can attest to this story in some level, whether it's drugs, whether it's whatever, like we all had an addiction to something, you know, probably had a lot of warning signs in a lot of ways, the universe, God, put in ways and, you know, people in our life to make sure that they could say, hey, slow down. You know what I'm saying? You can't, there's a way that this can end, and not really paying attention to it, which then leads to obviously hitting a wall, right? We're hitting a wall in some way. And then what happens next in your life?
So opiates came into my life and turned my life upside down. Life became dark, became unmanageable. I lost my mom in 2016. And that's where life really took a turn for the worse. I mean, I said I'd never stick a needle in my arm. Next thing I know, I'm banging. I'm putting my life on the line every single day. I overdosed twice to go back out and use that same exact night, looking like Pookie, like a crackhead outside of the hospital, going right back to use. Wow. I mean, if that's not being powerless over drugs and alcohol, then I don't know what is. Yeah. And that same year, in 2016 of August, I went to a self-help event with my sister. She invited me to a self-help event. And at that event, something clicked. I looked at my sister. She looked at me. We both started crying. She knew exactly what I was going to say. And then those words came out, the words that her and my family were waiting to hear for years. I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm living like a shell of myself. I'm tired of writing my obituary. I was sick of it. I wanted to begin creating my legacy. And that's when I got clean and sober. And I also was able to, you know, all those years, you know, I completely lost my way. You know, I was born and raised Catholic, but I lost my way. The relationship never existed. And I thought a relationship with God was Our Father, Hail Mary, asking for forgiveness when necessary. And then, you know, through being, you know, my sobriety, I've really built a relationship with God where today God's my father, my brother, my mother, my uncle, my everything. And when I put that spirituality first, I mean, doors start opening, mountains start moving, and it's just boom, action, you know? And that's a huge part of my success is that spirituality, building a relationship. I learned what the difference between religion and spirituality is.
And that's the thing. A lot of times, the line is very thin. It's probably not as thin as we make it, but there's a big difference that can be, you can slip into any time when it comes to relationship, when it comes to feeling like, well, if I'm doing these ritualistic things, right, these things that feel that I'm supposed to do, that says that at least it's classifying me as a Christian or it's classifying me as whatever, that I'm doing the right things and I'm having that relationship. But a lot of the time we don't realize that, hey, even if you were talking to somebody, if I'm talking to Joe, if I don't build that with you on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis, you can't truly learn me and I can't truly learn you. And I think it's like the same way with God, right? It's, you know, a lot of time we may go days, we're feeling good. We forget to pray in the morning. We forget to give thanks, right? And then as soon as something happens, we're at our wit's end. We're looking around or we're looking up at this point, and now we're calling on God. And, you know, we're not building that relationship on a daily, you know, to make sure that we're having that positive reinforcement spiritually. So I completely agree. And I think we all can attest to that. I've been that guy, right? Just feeling like I'm running at a high level and I'm not needing for anything, but that doesn't mean that I still don't need to build that relationship at all times. I completely agree. And I think that applies for anybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let me just tell you that a huge part of my success coming back, because I lost everything. I mean, literally lost everything. I went from Park Avenue to Park Bench. And to be able to build it back to where I build another seven-figure business is truly incredible. But it's because of that relationship. I mean, one of my morning rituals, because I believe routine is important towards success, right? It's about having that mindset shift and building a routine. And one of my routines is every morning I wake up with a morning of gratitude. It started off as 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Now today, there's times where it lasts an hour because I have so much to be thankful for. My gratitude is through the roof, you know? And if I don't put that first, my day doesn't start out the same. If I don't have that same routine, my day's not the same. So I that's what helps me not forget to do it every day, because I want to make sure that I have that energy. That same thing when I was getting high, I was out there looking for a feeling. That feeling, I get it through power of prayer. I get it through meditation. I get it when I help someone. I mean, there's no euphoric feeling that's going to be stronger than the euphoric feeling I get from my higher power, which is God.
Amazing. And thank you for reinforcing that. I think something that I say all the time is that gratitude is medicine for the mental. And, you know, a lot of times people don't understand what that means. But, hey, one thing about life, there's going to be good, there's going to be bad. I feel personally, and agree with me or disagree with me, if you can keep that median, which is gratitude, at all times, whether it's good, whether it's bad, it helps you get through life at a more efficient pace. Because, one, you know that, hey, if things are going well, for there to be natural balance of things, something quote unquote negative or bad has to happen. It's just positive, negative, right? Plus and minus, which is equal to energy. So for me, I try to keep gratitude. I always say every day, I'm grateful for it in the good. I'm grateful for it in the bad. And I feel like if you can keep that mindset, that helps you conquer life at a better pace.
Absolutely. You know, it's about keeping it at that level pace, right? And the only way you want to go is up, right? I mean, we all have mistakes, you know, failure is part of success. But once you hit that, you want to find a way to rise above it. And the way to, you know, one of the ways to do it is, like you're saying, keeping that gratitude in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you think, and let me reset the room, first of all. Well, once again, welcome to the Fly Young Intellectual Podcast. I'm your host, Kemuel Brown, and we have today Mr. Joe Rivera, who is a life coach. He's a motivational speaker. He's a keynote speaker. He's out here utilizing his platform and his experience to help anybody, young people, old people, whoever it is that's listening, to help them know that, hey, you can lose it all, you can gain it all right back. And it's not that it's easy, not that it's simple, but it does take your mindset, first of all, and he's literally bridging mindset and a relationship with God to show what and show and prove what it is can be done. And I think he's a very great testament of being a strong-willed man, a mentally strong man. And now he's showing it and using it through education, which I think is very important. For me, I always feel like it's very selfish if we don't share our experiences. No matter good, no matter bad. And that goes off of just saying, hey, somebody in the world is going through what Kem is going through. Somebody in the world is going through what Joe is going through. If Kem speaks up and uses the FYI podcast as a platform where he speaks on all things that he's going through, then somebody can listen and now say, hey, I'm not in this alone. And I think it's very important for people to know that they're not alone. Sometimes it feels dire. Sometimes it feels like, hey, man, I'm the only person going through this. But out of the billions of people that live in the world, somebody else is definitely going through it. So I really applaud you, bro, for taking something that's not pretty, right? It takes a lot of heart. It takes a lot of transparency to be able to put your shortcomings on Front Street and say, hey, people, look at my mess. Look at how that affected me. But look how God definitely brought me back, and how you can use your mindset to get out of a low place and get it all back together.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the button in a few spots. You know, I feel that this is a gift that I've been given, and I have to give it back. If I don't give it back, I'm being selfish. You know, God tugs at, God was tugging at me every day and hitting me, telling me, you know, this, you know, I built up a 7-figure pre-IPO business, and God's telling me every day, you know, you did this But this isn't your purpose. Your purpose is bigger than that. You have a bigger purpose. You have to give this back. If I don't give it back, I mean, it's like just disrespectful to God for everything he's done for me and put in my place. And, you know, if I could help one person by listening to this podcast, then, you know, that's a blessing in itself. You know, the more people that I can help throughout that process is more and more blessings that continue to come.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That it definitely, you said it perfectly. It's disrespectful to God, period. Right. Imagine him blessing you and giving you the opportunity to get it back, to go through that and come out stronger and with better vision, with better experience, with better, we're better to show for it and not finding a way to give that back in some way. Let me ask this question. How important do you think was it to repurpose your life and to use your personal trauma as the stepping stone to now come out of the low place that you were in?
Well, I think that now is when I'm really using that, you know, repurposing my life. You know, before it was kind of just building myself back up, working on my mindset, changing my mindset, because having that, putting the drugs and alcohol down, that's the easy part. Changing the mindset, that's where the work begins. That's where the real work is. So I had to take these last few years of sobriety and work on myself. Because if I can't work on myself, if I'm not happy with myself, there's no repurposing my life and giving it back. You know, mm-hmm. So it really came from working within, like peeling that onion back, working on myself, getting myself back into the groove of things, really understanding who I am, understanding that I don't need drugs and alcohol. You got to understand, I was doing drugs and alcohol for half my life. And I didn't know how to live without drugs. So having mm-hmm. to find that again and be able to get that going, that's how I was able to build it back and then be able to know that, listen, I have to repurpose myself and kind of pivot. And now I got to build this platform to give it back.
And I want to touch on what you said, because if you didn't deal with you first, there's no giving, right? And I think a lot of the time we all try to give so much and we leave ourselves behind, but it was just as important, if not the most important thing, to make sure that Joe was good first. If you couldn't be good within yourself, if you couldn't make sure that you were mentally strong, you didn't need your vices anymore and all those kind of things, you know, it would be harder for you to be able to go out there and to show and prove and to educate people, because you still wouldn't be right, whatever that looks like, right? You still would be working through that.
Yeah, it's kind of, when you think about it, it's kind of, I had to be selfish in order to be selfless.
Let me put in some claps here. That's very good. Very good. That's very good. That's very good. He had to be selfish before he could be selfless. And that's the thing. We're accountable for ourselves, right? Obviously, in life, there's different things that comes with it. You may get married, so now you're accountable for your wife, your spouse. You may have kids, so now you're accountable for your kids, right? You have a business, now you're accountable for your employees. But we tend to forget, because life kind of, it seems like it pulls from you a lot, right? And we don't have that time to like look within. We don't have that time to do the self work. We often leave ourselves behind. And then you realize when things get too crazy that you should have been selfish in the first place. And now you still got to go back and look at yourself and make sure you're good, because eventually that has an expiration date when you have to make sure that you're straight.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. I mean, you can't take care of anybody if you don't take care of yourself. You yeah. know, so I definitely had to learn how to really take care of myself the right way, you know, not yep. financially. I mean, financial, the materialistic things, those come and go in life. You know, it's being able to really sit with myself and sit with peace, sit with serenity, sit with love, and for myself. So then I can give it to my family, and then I can give it to others. And that's kind of really where that comes from for me.
No, that's amazing, bro. That's amazing. Let's stay in that realm of mindset, right? You being a mindset coach, you being someone who obviously, you know, literally live and prove what the power of mindset can be. What are some hacks, so to speak? And we're not saying hacks in a you know, like an easy 1, 2, 3 step way. But if you were to give some gems away on how to build mindset, what are like 3 or 4 ways that you would educate our audience on how to build a mindset?
Well, number one, prayer and meditation, man, is huge. It's so important. It's so important for so many reasons, not just mindset, building perseverance muscles. It's important for it also. You're putting together an action plan. You got to have, you know, that first is part of your routine, at least for me. It's definitely one way I would say to create mindset is also putting together, creating an action plan so you can have things in order to be able to achieve those goals, right? Because you want to be able to go out there and shatter your goals. And in order to do that, you have to have the right mindset.
Yeah.
So I think those two are very important. I think also I would say another good way to really create muscles in that mindset, reading and listening to personal development. I mean, reading is extremely powerful, extremely important. That's how we grow. You want to be able to grow through growth. You read, you listen to videos. I mean, there's so much at our fingertips right now. And it's a shame because a lot of people don't take advantage of what's out there, you know, and there's so much opportunity out there to grow if you utilize what's in front of us and the resources that we have.
Absolutely. And going back to the first part of it, I feel like the stillness, right? Through prayer and meditation, that was your first gem. I feel like a lot of the times we don't have the time to quiet our mind, which a lot of the time is like a lot of the work, right? There's a lot going on at all times. You know, we're engaged, we're high paced environment, going. There's no time to really quiet the mind. So just as important as it is to talk to God and have that moment, I feel like that's best for quieting the mind, making sure that you discipline yourself to say, hey, whether it's 5, 10, 20 minutes, let me take the time out to be quiet, to be still, right? Pray, reason, you know, whether it's, you know, therapeutic music or whatever that is, get yourself in a zone that you can have a clear mind, especially in the morning, before you kind of get your day started. That's kind of like where I have to find that sweet spot, you know, instead of just jumping out the bed, you know, say a quick prayer, brush your teeth, take a shower, get out the house, find, maybe wake up a little earlier, right? You know, set some time where you can literally be quiet, sit still, meditate, harp on the things that you're grateful for, harp on the things that you have to take care of later this week, you know, and make sure that you can have the space and the mental fortitude to attack the week. Or the day, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the button. And one other thing I kind of want to touch on of why it's important for prayer and meditation is it quiets down the mind chatter, right? Because we all have that mind chatter, that other voice that kind of is in our head. I call it the gremlin that kind of comes and tries to disrupt your day and disrupt your motivation, to disrupt your momentum. And if you allow that mind chatter, gremlin to do that, guess what? It's going to happen. But if you're focusing on quieting down your mind and being able to block that out and know when it's coming and know how to take over that, you know, that's really important when it comes to mindset, because our mind, man, is the most powerful tool that we were blessed with, hands down. I mean,
hands down.
If we could go back to when we were kids, how wild our imagination is, right? If we're able to bring that to adulthood, I mean, sky's the limit, man. It really is. Sky's the limit. I mean, you look at guys like Steve Jobs, you know, God bless his soul, but Mm-hmm. I'm not even an Apple fan. I have a Samsung. But, I mean, the guy's imagination was incredible. And that's something that got him to being one of the most successful entrepreneurs in the world of all time.
Yeah. And that's another gem. I mean, obviously, it's just going to be a conversation of gems. But the childlike creativity and mindset, definitely, I feel like we were taught to kind of leave that behind, right? Or even like, you know, people like to misquote, you know, when I was a child, I spake like a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. A lot of times people use that as like a weapon to say, hey, man, you should throw away your childlike creativity, you should throw away that childlike imagination, which I don't believe, as you said, that's not what it's saying either. You have to be able to bring that along, because all those people that you realize, for the most part, are very successful. They either had that childlike creativity, or if they lost it, they spent a lot of their energy and time chasing back after it, right? You have people like Michael Jackson, for example. A lot of the issues Mike went through was because he was a child superstar. Joe, even if he did what was right in his mind, took away his childhood because, hey, man, the money, the talent, the road, this is the kind of stuff we have to do. And it took that away from him. And then you recognize that Mike was always trying to find ways to like keep that inner child or get that back. The Peter Pan thing and the you know, Neverland Ranch thing. All of these were just examples of him literally not having a childhood, not being able to keep that childlike creativity. And then he literally kind of died chasing that for the rest of his life.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. I mean, Mike is really a good example of, you know, his childhood got taken away from him, you know, and he kind of had that imagination and chasing that childhood his whole life. Yeah, I mean, the Neverland, he had an amusement park in his backyard, you know what I mean?
Literally.
It's incredible. So,
yeah, man. Nah, that was a great point, man. I that's something that I've been working on personally. In my transparency, just like through therapy and things like that, you know, sometimes, obviously, as a child, we are very naive. You know, we're children. We're doing what we're supposed to do. And then you realize later in life, if you're doing the self-work, a lot of the issues that we have later in life stem from back then, right? But just because we were so childlike, we were so innocent in what we were doing, we were just living life, having fun, playing, keeping it moving. And then you realize later in life, there are some issues there, underlying issues a lot of the time. And that's where a lot of it stems from. And then we have to kind of go back, dig through that treasure chest, so to speak, of memories when it comes to that childlike creativity, that childlike imagination, the things that we had when we were children, and realize that there was a lot of trauma there. In your experience, as you did the work and came out of the abuse, And things like that, did you tie any of that trauma to your childhood, do you think?
Can you elaborate on that more? Are you saying, like, as far as do I pin my drug abuse to any trauma from my childhood?
Yeah. When you were doing that stuff, did any of that relate, kind of go back to your childhood? Did it kind of correlate in that way?
No, man. I'm not one of those people who's going to sit here and blame, you know, my drug abuse on a poor childhood and, you know, abuse. And I didn't go through any of that. You know, like I said, my mom was an amazing mother. She never abused me. I had a really good upbringing. I was loved by my aunts, my grandmother, my brothers and sisters. I mean, I had an awesome childhood. I just was one of those guys. I was just a rebel. I wanted to hang out and just party. Yeah, and it was just there, you know. The one thing I will say is it does run in my family, drug abuse. And I'm breaking the chain, man. I'm defying the odds. Every day I wake up, I defy the odds. Technically, I'm not supposed to be here. You know, I'm one of God's miracles, and I'm enjoying it. I'd rather wake up to find the odds than wake up trying to look for what drug and what high I'm going to chase, man.
And it's so short-lived, too, right? You know, you kind of chase that, you get it, then it's over. So now you have to go chase it again. And you might as well kind of build your high on something that's more sustainable, something that's long lasting, something that's real.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you again, you hit it on the button. You know, I'm chasing something now that's more sustainable. And that's to continue getting that feeling that I get from my higher power again, which is God. And I'd rather chase that any day of the week because it is more sustainable. And it's going to get me into a better place in the afterlife when I got to face him anyway. So,
yeah, might as well, right? Might as well. Oh, here's another question I think that's important. If you had to kind of compare and contrast, was it harder to kind of live with the pain of your mom passing prior to getting that help, or kind of after, like once you started getting the help, and did that help you deal with that in a more healthy way?
So when I lost my mom, I was broken, completely broken. I mean, mentally, spiritually, financially, emotionally bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And through gaining sobriety, I was able to gain that spiritual, like my spiritual bank kept building up, and now I've created spiritual wealth, right? And through that process, I've learned how to be able to really accept my mom's passing and to know that my mom is with me every single day. Because let me tell you, Ken, there's not a day that goes by that I do not feel my mom's spirit and know that she's with me without a question. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's taught me a whole way of life, of understanding, you know, how things work. There is an afterlife there, you know, how God works. And it's really brought that into fruition. Well, now today, yeah, I lost my mom physically, but I have a spiritual relationship with her that's so incredible, so unbreakable. And there's nothing that'll ever tell me different because it's too obvious.
And that's a great point. You know, I think, I don't know where the disconnect comes from when it comes to like spirit realm. And I guess we could go down a rabbit hole for hours at a time on like where that disconnect is. But somewhere down the line, we were taught that obviously once someone is dead, that's it, right? Their spirit, everything completely leaves this earth. And I don't think people understand the spirit, the breath aspect, you know, the spirit going, kind of going back out into the world. And literally, you know, someone's physical body could be gone, but I truly believe that, you know, in some way their spirit definitely lives on beyond that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they don't call it the eternal life for nothing. You know, they live on through us. They live vicariously through us. You know, and that's how they continue to live on and continue to be that guardian angel. You know, we could go on for days. I don't want to make this a thing about right. just God, but I mean,
right.
It doesn't even have to be God. Whatever anyone wants their higher power to be, it could be the universe, yeah. It could be a tree, whatever it is. Yeah. But you gotta have some kind of higher power and know that there's something, you know, more powerful than you that brings you through existence, you know, and you know, that's, I believe that's very important.
Yeah. No problem. And hey man, it's my podcast. So we'll make it whatever we want. Right.
but
I get it, completely get it. You know, believing, faith, have that all builds mindset as well, in my opinion. Right. For me, Flying Intellectual is all about mindset, right? When I came up with the idea of Flying Intellectual, it was about how can I personify mindset. And for me, Kobe Bryant was like my mindset muse growing up. Rest in peace. Literally the only non-tangible person, male figure that I've looked up to from afar was Kobe Bryant from the time I was a child. I don't know why, but growing up in the Virgin Islands, there was this, and Tim Duncan was our hero. So I could have looked to Tim, but like there was something about Kobe where, you know, it was just the way he worked, the way he kind of locked in, and that focus he had. I kind of utilized that, and I played sports as well, but I recognized that it transcended sports, and I could tap into that when I wanted to do anything, right? And as I started realizing the power of that, I realized that, hey man, mindset was Kobe's, that was his gift to us. It was about telling us and showing us that, hey man, you can do anything you want. So that's why when he retired, he could literally use that same mindset, go into making films, go into making, doing different things and be mad successful at that, probably more successful than any other athlete in terms of that transition. So for me, when I was coming up with the idea, I'm like, man, what is like something that can personify the mindset that we need to have? And like Flying Intellectual for me was literally like, look good, feel good. You know, youth is as much about the mind as it is about your physical body. If you can keep your mind young and your entire being as young as you can, then through mindset, then you can kind of live a very fulfilled and youthful life. And an intellectual was from a place of just thinking outside of the box, right? And that's always necessary, I feel like, when you're really training your mindset. How do you train it? What do you put in? As you said, reading, intaking good things, reinforcing what it is that you need, and then making sure that whatever it is that you regurgitate, you're giving it back out into the world and you're educating. So that's why, like, you really kind of, like, when you came across our radar, like, that's what really related to me, because you were so, your bottom line is like, hey man, your mindset has got to be right. And I completely agree. I think anything is attainable as long as you have your mindset correct.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Kobe, that Mamba mentality, man. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, Kobe and Jordan, that they had that mindset that was killer. Just yeah. Nobody else had it. And you know what? If you really think, I mean, probably one of the number one things to their mindset and for them to have that was repetition, right? Repetition is the mother of skill. So the more you do something, that's how you're going to master it. And that's kind of how they mastered the game. I mean, who was the first guys at practice? Who was the last ones to leave? They took the most shots. They missed the most shots. You know what I mean? But they were the winners. You know, they weren't afraid to take that game shot, the game winner at the end of the game, because they had the mindset that I'm going to do it. This is my game, you know? And that's kind of the attitude you have to have. Yeah, that's it. That's the attitude you want to have. You know, you can't be afraid to fail. People, that when you get afraid to fail, you're not going to see success enough.
And that's, I had to learn that, man. For me, growing up, I was very, very afraid to fail. And I think I can, you know, this isn't even blaming. This is just like going through my mind. You know, it was always like, hey, you have to get all A's. You have to do this. You have to do that, whatever that looks like. So now you're just programmed that anything less than the standard is a failure, right? So now I'm programmed, you go through college, all this kind of stuff. And maybe that's the infrastructure for that, right? Obviously, I guess technically you can't succeed in school if you get an F. So maybe it's that infrastructure. However, because, you know, we're in school for 12 straight years or whatever, maybe 15 years, maybe 20 years, it depends on what it is that you're studying, you know, you get programmed, and that's what you internalize, and then you just feel like, well, that's how life has to be too. If I try to do this business and I fail, then it's over, right? I can't recoup that. I can't go back after it. There's no second chance, and we kind of like groom ourselves in that way. How important do you think the failure and the rock bottom, how important was that in your redemption story?
I think it was extremely important because it humbled me. It humbled me. I was in my 20s thinking I was on top of the world. Like I thought I had the world by the balls. Traveling the world, doing whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And I that failure was necessary in my life for more than one reason. You know, just to learn what being resilient really is, to learn to have that mindset shift, you know, that paradigm shift happened because of my failure. And the mindset that I have now was built because of my failure. And, you know, the thing about failure is it comes from when we're younger, the limited beliefs that come into our life. Because you think of a baby, when a baby comes into the world, a baby, they're not afraid to fail. They fall down, they bust their ass, they're getting right back up, right? And they're trying it again. It's as we get older, we start hearing, you can't do this, you can't do that. The word can't, comes into our vocabulary so much, and it becomes embedded into our brain, and we don't, you know, so unless we crack those limited beliefs, that's how we're going to really learn that, oh shit, you know what, if I fail, I get back up, just like when I was a baby, I do it again, and I do it better than I did the last time.
And that's how that child, hey, being a child is literally a superpower. And if you can hold on to that as much as you can, pairing it up with being a grown up and having these experiences and maturing, you unite that, man. I do believe that's where success really comes from. You mentioned like a Steve Jobs, you know, Walt Disney, these type of dudes, even Kanye, you know, to a certain extent, he has his asterisks here and there, but you realize that he really does glean from a place of that childlike creativity. And he does, and all those rants a lot of the time and stuff he used to go on about not having access to certain things because they wanted to put him in that box. He was saying, don't put me in that box because now you're limiting me. And I want to create at the highest level. I want to still be, you know, young Kanye, where I feel like I can design a shoe, I can rap, I can produce, I can do all these things and take the box off of me. And you know, he fought to make sure that he could do it. And, you know, he became a $1 billion guy for that. So so I think all of those things are definitely important. And I'm still learning, you know, I think we all learn till the day we die, obviously. And that's how it should be. But I'm learning in real time, especially over this last year, of how and what it means to just literally put it all together, the childlike creativity, the mindset of the fortitude that we need to have, and the dreamer, unite it all together and find ways to navigate failure, find ways to navigate life, keep that attitude of gratitude, as you said. That's kind of like the lifeline, so to speak, that keeps you grounded. And from there, I think wherever you end up on the totem pole of things gives you a great shot, and I think you'll be satisfied and happy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Listen, at the end of the day, we create our own destiny, right? Life's going to be what we make it, you know, and if we keep that in front of us and know that, listen, we could do anything we put our mind to. You know, I mean, my story is not unique. Everyone has a vice, right? I mean, whether it be drugs and alcohol, whether it be overeating, whether it be gambling, whether it be sex, there's so many different vices out there and that allow our character defects to come out. But if we realize that once we overcome those vices and we overcome those character defects, that we could do anything we put our mind to as long as we have the right mindset, I mean, sky's the limit.
I agree 100%. Man, Joe, thank you so much for the gems that you've dropped tonight, man. I could keep it going personally, but I think that was like a perfect bow on top of it, man. Let the people know where they can find you. Let them know, you know, how to follow Joe Rivera's journey, how to hire your services, just, you know, anything that you need to plug, please go ahead.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Well, you can follow me on Instagram at @W_Joe_Rivera. And you can go to my website, which is withjoerivera.com. And you can fill out the info there, and we can set up a productivity call. It's a free call. And let's get to know each other and see if there's a fit.
Amazing. I highly recommend Joe, man. Him and I, as I said, we just started getting to know each other, but I can see that this is going to be, you know, whether it's a tight friendship or near or far, we're always going to be in contact. I like to like align myself with like-minded people. And you know, you came across my desk, and I'm grateful that you did. Thank you for the gems. Thank you for the time that you've taken out, to share your story. I think the world needs to hear it, and our platform was definitely happy to host you.
And I was happy to be here. Thanks for having me, man. And I definitely agree. We're going to keep in contact.
Yes, sir. No problem, man. Well, once again, thank you for joining the Fly Young Intellectual podcast, guys. Follow us at Instagram at Fly Young Intellectual, on Facebook as well at Fly Young Intellectual, where we inform, inspire, and interact with our community. Y'all take care. Peace.